Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning and welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show here on the Voice of Vachon. We're located on beautiful Vachon Island, Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events, always laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less, but of course he always offered very much more. So this morning I'd like to introduce the Briefly panel. We have Legal Eagle, former constitutional law professor, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, and Fulbright scholar, Mr. Craig Bellis.
Good morning, everyone.
Craig Bellis. I got a little confused there. So how about the avid defender of justice, mariner cyclist, top secret engineer, and the head of an indivisible Vachon, Mr. Kevin Jones?
I'm here today. And Truman, we got to make it good today.
Yeah.
We're great. It has to be a great show because, you know, the 100-plus people last night, we told them that they should tune
listening.
In. And,
yeah,
that, you know, it was just yesterday, so they're probably... I think on the big board is a listenerometer kind of pegged right now. Okay, well, keep an eye on that.
No pressure.
Okay, all right. It was a great... over 100 people showed up at Indivisible Vachon meeting last night. You guys were there.
We were there.
So, yeah, and we told them that we're going to be here today. So, yeah, I'm looking forward seeing what they think.
All right.
Okay, but yeah, let's go.
All right, our fairy maven, part-time political playwright, full-time shenanigans coordinator, is Ms. Amy Dreher.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Notice I threw playwright in there.
Yeah, that was true of me this weekend.
I know, we're gonna be talking about that. Okay, how about our historian, an international professor, party animal, and down under aficionado, Mr. Bruce Hallman. Good morning, Bruce.
We're losing that sense of what historians are. So, yes, pronounce it correctly, please.
Boy, no kidding.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Gee, wise. I'm Truman O'Brien. I'm sitting here behind the big red switch on the board of the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio right here in beautiful downtown Vachon. And this is today lovingly call the Truman Show. The Truman Show is when we have no guest, and I don't quite understand that, but anyway, that's what we've decided to call
There's
it.
There's a historian here.
There is.
There's a movie called The Truman Show.
Oh, yeah.
And you need to watch that movie to understand why we named this The Truman Show.
I have to tell you that, I saw that movie, and I've only met maybe one other Truman in my whole life, maybe two in my whole life. And so sitting in that silly movie, every time they said Truman, I went, what? What?
Is that who, me?
Yeah, who, me? It really bothered me. So, hey, before we jump into our show this week, we need to check in with everybody. And Kevin, we know what you were up to, but go ahead and fill us in.
Oh, well, there's a couple of things. So Indivisible Vachon got together. You know, we've been talking to members about what's going on since right after the election, and concerns people have, aspirations that people have, you know, to come together with, you know, building our community and strengthening our resolve. And so last night was the opportunity for the leadership team to say, here's what we think we have capacity to move forward with. Mm-hmm. And not to say there aren't other great ideas that people can bring forward. So we're in that process, and we're reaching out to folks. Like today, for example, at 1:30, at 1:30, I'm going to be on the King County Water Taxi. We're going to go visit our senator's offices to talk about the fact that we'd really not like them to just roll over in the face of this new administration. So I'll be on the boat. If you want to join me, head that way, and we'll
the
go one, up.
1:30 water taxi.
1:30 water taxi. Okay. It's like a 4-minute walk up to the federal building from 2 to 3. The water taxi return is... it's going to be a little later than maybe we'd want. There's a 3 o'clock boat, but there's also probably the 4:30 that we're going to be on.
Well, you can stop off at the Titanic exhibit while you're there.
The Pinball Museum. We might go visit Pramila's office. You know, there's so many things.
There's also a couple bars right
along there. Which we might, maybe. You
may need a little fortification. Yeah.
But I should also say, you know, while I got the mic, that 6:30 tonight.
Yes.
The Quartermaster Yacht Club Tech Talk on navigation chart accuracy. And if you want to stop in from some eye-popping, I'm not kidding you, eye-popping, oh my God, I can't believe the charts did that, then that's the place to be. So it's at the Hut, Myers Hut on the water, Quartermaster Yacht Club. You go from the Burton four-way stop just north to up to the top of the hill. There's a little building on your right with our sign. You walk down the ramp, you bring, make sure to bring your traction devices.
Yeah, boy, no
kidding. It's a steep hill.
It's a steep, very steep hill, and probably going to be a little slippery tonight.
Truman and I can tell you one thing about charts. We had many, many backup charts, electronic charts on this,
charts.
But we also had our paper charts, and we found out that they burn like an effigy.
Oh, boy, do they ever.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, they burn great.
but if you need to stay warm, you know, it's solution.
That's signal.
The signal, which that worked too. Yeah. Okay, Bruce, how about you? What were you up to this week?
Oh, pretty quiet week. Very prosaic compared to Kevin's activities. But actually had the first weekend without football games.
Oh, yeah.
Super Bowl, of course, is this weekend. And then we go into the drought for, you know, 3-4 months until the preseason starts and all that kind of stuff. But actually have been fighting the rats at my daughter's house.
Oh, boy.
So, you know, it's that time of year when they all seek warmth inside. So so setting traps and sort of all that kind of stuff, plugging holes. And it's always an interesting aspect to sort of start walking around houses and looking underneath and crawling in the crawl spaces.
It's amazing.
Sort of like, oh, my God, there's so many places that rats can get in. But hopefully we'll be successful. So,
well, I told you, it took out five inside my house.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. So now all we need is a good rat catcher in Washington, D.C.
Well, they're a family,
D.C.
True, I guess.
Yeah, pardon me.
Weren't they family?
They were family. I took out, started with the dad. He was the first one I got. Oh, man.
You know, you're reminding, we moved to Vashon, and the house that we bought would have been empty for like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And one of the features it had was a hot tub out you know, in the back.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that I realized after not having ever owned a hot tub, that the insulation around a hot tub is pretty much styrofoam.
Oh, yeah.
And it became a mouse palace. It was awesome how many rooms they had created.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, keep your eye on that stuff.
Oh, boy. All right, Amy, I know what you've been up to, but you better fill us in anyway.
Yeah, this was last week. I'm overwhelmed by the 2 weeks of my life, last week and this week, in a good way, though, because there's great stuff going on. Lots of stuff last week, but I say the highlight for sure was participating in 1448, which is, you know, Vashon's not only theater festival and not only on Vashon Theater Festival, but it's 14 plays, 48 hours, 7 plays are produced each day, written, learned, directed, acted, and put up from morning to evening. And it is incredible to see, you know, the group photo. I think there's probably 50 people the group photo, right? Plus. So, I mean, you know, that's like tech, design, lighting, acting, directing, traffic management.
Music.
Oh, man, that band. The 1448 band.
Were they great? Yeah.
Yeah, John Whalen he rocks that band. Yep. He is a superb director. So that is a great thing. It happens at the end of January every year at O Space. And if you haven't gone, it's great. They're 10-minute plays. So if you're not vibing, the next one's coming right up.
So, the play that you did on Saturday, but which was yours on Friday? I didn't get a program.
Yeah, so, you know, the writers are given a prompt every evening. The writers get their prompt about 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and then you go home and write the play. And the prompt for what ended up being Friday's shows was As You Wish.
Yes.
And so I, being someone who was slamming it into right brain gear, quickly went for the low-hanging fruit, which was a Princess Bride send-up. of course.
Oh, that was yours.
Yes,
oh,
and
was
I was
excellent.
Thank you. I was shocked to be the only Princess Bride sent up, given the on the nose capacity. But I think everyone else thought, like, you know, I should do something a little more original than that.
No,
but
that was great.
I went with it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was just terrific. Your writing was excellent on that.
Thank you.
And you were quite serious on your Saturday play.
I did. Yeah,
I was surprised. You know, most of them were comedies, but you were quite serious.
Yeah.
Really,
it was
well done.
The prompt on Saturday for Saturday's show was Do Over. And, you know, usually at 1448, you get a mix of comedy and drama. Mm-hmm. You know, different folks tackle stuff. But this was the first year I've been a part of it where it was all comedies except for this one that I did on Saturday. And I usually do comedies for it because, I'm going to just be honest, it's a little easier to do comedy than to, you know, get right into the at 9 o'clock at night, be like, what do I truly feel about this? You know, you know, where's my truth in this? So I went out on a limb and I was really, really impressed. You know, the actors just kind of delivered it.
They nailed it.
Yeah, it was good.
Great. Okay, Craig, how about you, Phil?
You know, in this time of overwhelm, as Michael Mead and Amy Dreher would say, I find ways to center myself and sleep at night. And one of them is movies and music. Lynette and I started out Tuesday with the Maury Island incident at the theater, a fundraiser for the Vashon Historical Society. I've seen that movie now 3 times. And every time I see it, I learn something new about the flying saucers off the coast. The one thing that I got a kick out of was our theater right here opened about 2 weeks before that incident in 1947.
Really?
And I ran into Eileen Walcott behind the concession stand, and I said to her, I go, that was a hell of a promotional deal that you put on with the flying saucers, you know, after you opened it.
Grand opening.
Grand opening. The other thing that was interesting, Truman, is that the FBI agents who unfortunately died in a B-25 going back to San Francisco from here, crashed at almost the same spot that you and I crashed.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
We've got
our own little devil's triangle, I think, over there.
Interesting.
And then on Thursday, saw A Complete Unknown at the theater.
What a great movie,
Bob Dylan. It brought back lots of memories. Wonderful. On Friday, we went to see Ben Hunter, a fellow, remember, that we interviewed here at the Brown briefly, the artistic director of Northwest Folklife. He played 3 instruments because anything with strings on it, he can play. He played a mandolin, a steel guitar, and his violin, which he's trained in and played for years. It was just wonderful. And then finally, the meeting last night, Indivisible Vashon. And I did the counting, too, and I came up with over 100 people. It was a great meeting, Kevin, and you did a great job moderating it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we could all hear you, too.
Oh, well, you know, there was a projection challenge there.
Yes.
But I think I was reminded many times that I needed to amp it up. So
you did good.
Yeah. Well, my week was, you guys have already told about my week. I did 1448 both Friday and Saturday nights. Fabulous. I did the 7 o'clock show. Mm-hmm. And just an excellent, excellent production all around. I mean, I was so impressed. It goes so fast. And what was interesting is the first night, I said they collaborated with the LA 1448, and they gave you the As You Wish.
Yep.
And then you guys gave them, I don't remember.
Against All Odds.
Against All Odds, yeah. So I thought that was really interesting that they shared their themes. And but anyway, that was just terrific. So anyway, that was my week. Well, you know, usually when we say this is a significant day, it's usually pretty frivolous. But, you know, today's an important day. It's World Cancer Day. It's a global healthcare event for the awareness of cancer, which has been commemorated on February 4th for every year for the past 24 years since 2000. With the aim of spreading awareness and educating people about the detection, treatment of, and prevention of cancer. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, that is today, February 4th.
And to that end, there's a
a woman that I talked to who turns out that the work she does is to produce the medications, right? And,
right.
Mm-hmm. And so I was chatting with her about a niece that I have who is basically a survivor of a very, very severe condition, which mm-hmm. normally would be life-ending. Mm-hmm. And her scans are clear, right? Wow. And we don't know. There's no way to know,
of
right,
course.
How long that's going to hold true. But it's sort of like a miracle.
Yeah.
And so I was mentioning that to this woman, and she said, yeah, yeah, there's hope now. You know, the medications, the solutions that we now have are just incredible. And so yeah. the motivation to really continue, you know, it was palpable in talking to this woman. So I was really impressed by that.
They're even talking about vaccines for some of the cancers, which I find just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah. I was interested in why February 4th is World Cancer Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason is it marks the 25th year
oh, yeah.
of the signing of the Charter of Paris Against Cancer at the World Summit Against Cancer for the new millennium.
Mm. Yeah.
So February 4th. Interesting.
Pretty cool.
Too bad the United States will no longer be participating in cancer research or summits like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. We're going to be getting into that a little bit today. Well, I'll try and make our Today in History a little bit quicker than we normally do. But I thought this is pretty interesting that 1789 was our first electoral college. They chose George Washington, of course, as president, and John Adams as vice. In 1794, the French National Convention proclaimed the abolition of slavery. That is 1794. And how many years later was it for us? 1865? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty, yeah, pretty amazing, huh? Took that long for us to get the idea. 1854, Alvin Beauvray proposes the name Republican Party. That was in Ripon, Wisconsin. I thought that was interesting. 1914, now this one is interesting. The U.S. Congress approved the Burnett anti-immigration law, which refers to the Immigration Act of 1917, also known as the Literacy Act or the Burnett Act, which significantly restricted immigration to the United States by imposing a literacy test on all immigrants over 16 years of age, effectively barring many from entering the country, particularly those from Asia and the Pacific region. And the law was sponsored by, obviously, the Congressman John Lawson Burnett. In 1921, it was modified... Yeah, I was just going to say, in 1921, it was modified to open it to Mexican farm laborers, that it wouldn't apply to them, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, and interesting, in that 1921 Immigration Act, it literally closed all immigration to the United States. So it was a progression
right.
of things beginning in the 1880s with the Chinese Exclusion Act,
right.
all the way up to 1921 when, bam, the door slammed. And so the nation of immigrants closed its doors.
It's amazing to me. What year again? 1884?
1883. Three, I think, was the Chinese Exclusion Act,
right.
and
wow.
then you know a series of sort of exclusionary right. laws,
right.
but culminating in that 1921 Immigration Act, which just literally you
closed
know,
everything.
Yeah, closed the door for wow. everybody, basically.
Wow. And to keep on this theme, 1938, Adolf Hitler seizes control of the German army and puts Nazis in key positions. Isn't that interesting? Amazing how that happens. 1945, of course, was the Yalta meeting in Crimea. That's to discuss the end of World War II. 2004, Mark Zuckerberg launches Facebook from his Harvard dormitory room. How about that? Did you ever see the movie? Pretty interesting about that. And the last one, here's one for you, Amy. 2013, Paris, France. They annulled the 213-year-old law banning women from wearing trousers.
All right. Going back to France.
Yeah, 2013. Yeah. 2013. Can you believe it? Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. All right. So here we go, guys. We had a long discussion about how to tackle all of the issues of the day amongst ourselves here, and we said, geez, do we really want to be in the world of overwhelm as Amy brought to us last week, or do we really want to look at what are some specific issues that we can have some effect, where we can do something for ourselves and for our country?
And so we've kind of decided that's the way to go. Dude, let's get a bit more positive. And I really appreciate your approach last night, Kevin, at the Indivisible Vashon. You guys are on the march. That's very impressive.
Well, and I'm glad you said you guys, because while we're actually a very gender balanced team, there was I think there are more women now in the leadership team than men, which I'm always happy to see, frankly. But it was a team effort, and you saw a lot of leaders standing up there, and there's maybe room for a few others who have some great ideas. So, but hopefully we will share opportunities for people to be involved, engaged in lots of different ways. And so we've got some recipes for that.
So so Craig put together a list of things that he really felt strongly about. And we're starting with the elimination of the birthright citizenship that Trump is trying to come out with an executive order against the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So, Craig, you want to start us out?
Sure. We're starting with the elimination of basically individuals who are born in the United States have a right to be citizens of the United States, and the president is trying to eliminate that. Luckily, a federal judge here in Seattle put a temporary injunction on that and declared it one of the most patently unconstitutional orders that's ever been entered that he's ever seen in his 40 years as a federal judge.
Yeah. I think you're quoting there, right? Patently unconstitutional.
Yeah, basically. Yes, yeah. I'm not embellishing that.
And he was a judge appointed by Ronald Reagan.
That's correct.
Yeah. Not a screaming liberal judge by any means.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly. In a larger context, aside from the fact that it's an unconstitutional move, because in order to effectuate that, you'd have to get an amendment to the United States Constitution, which, as we know from the Equal Rights Amendment, is no mean task. I think it was a lot easier to overturn prohibition and bring alcohol back. But be that as it may, perhaps is part of an overall scheme, if you will, a methodology to create scapegoats, people of color. The exaggerations that went along with this directive are over the top in terms of people who are, rapists and murderers and whatnot. And as I think most people know, immigrants per capita commit much less violent crime than your white citizenry of the United States. So I don't see any move to move those people out of the United States.
So the question I had, and it was not clear, was that, so is this only people who are born to folks who are not citizens? Is that the idea? And if that's the case, how do you become a citizen? And how are all of us citizens, if that was the case? I mean, your parents were citizens. Okay, how did they become citizens? Oh, well, their parents were. Well, how did they become citizens?
Yeah. Well, there are other methods to become citizens.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, are we all going to be required to take a citizenship exam? I mean, is that
we'd fail it? Have you seen the citizenship
exam?
Yeah,
I know. Well, the 13 colonies. That's the only answer I know. Come on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, who's the president of the United States? It's creating chaos. It's a chaos technique. If you destroy government, if you gut the government institutions that we have, you have scapegoats like. People, I mean, the latest scapegoats, of course, are one, immigrants, and two, anybody who might in some way be related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which, of course, includes women.
Yes,
period.
Indeed. Period, yeah.
Right. And without any other adjectives in front of it. We're in, like Vance. Said the vice president, buckle up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
I can jump in, you know, I think you're on to something here, Craig, in the sense that, you know, executive orders like that, you know, there's really no chance of it ever being really implemented. But it's the sort of the purpose behind it is to, one, create distraction, and also to build this sense that there's an enemy out there that's embodied by immigrants, people of color, women, DIE, all these kind of things. And so it's part of a sort of a coordinated campaign to sort of get people to start thinking of who are the enemies.
Plus, it's an emotional negotiation tact.
Yeah, exactly.
You take a stance that is so far in one direction, and then you move somewhat back, and you've got what you want.
And the other side thinks they've won.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Well, and right. I mean, the whole renaming of the Gulf, you know, of Mexico, or McKinley versus Denali, all of that stuff, I think it's just for a distraction, like you said.
Plus, it's a power trip. What's the word? You know,
ego boosting.
Well, no, I mean it's like an advertisement. I mean, right. you're telling your supporters, here, I'm powerful. I just renamed the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
I just renamed Mount McKinley.
Right.
You know, so.
So this brings us right into the obliteration of the DEI and all the federal government. And that one looks like it's definitely on the way. I mean, they're firing the whole department of DEI. I'm not sure where it was associated, but...
It's all through the government.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, within the Department of Defense, for instance, I mean, there's a great photograph of the FBI headquarters where they're painting over the wall with all these statements about equality and freedom and, you know, and justice and all those kind of things. So, I mean, it's very insidious in that sense. And it takes the minions behind it to make it happen. And so that's what's sort of amazing to me is just the number of people who are willing to step up and do things that probably in their heart of their hearts, if they have one, they know is wrong. And yet at the same time, you know, they're implementing what their leader is asking for. And so that's the slippery slope that we're on.
I was going to say, did that happen in 1939? Same thing.
Earlier, you know, 32, 33, when Hitler came to power, getting the Reichstag to change the law so that Hitler became the arbiter of laws is what, that's the slippery slope you're on, and that's what you're seeing right now, to me, is whether or not we have enough backbones in the Congress, Senate, and House to begin to stand up to this kind of stuff.
Well, and that's why our trip today, 1:30 water taxi to the federal building to speak with our senators' aides is really, I think, fundamental to that. What I see in these examples we've cited is whether or not they can pull off the notion that they alone can control the actions of the government and that they eliminate congressional oversight, they eliminate all of the normal checks and balances that our founders put into the Constitution for really good reason, right? Because we did not want to see this kind of stuff happen in this country. So how, you know, as a person sitting here around the table, you know, geez, what can I do about that? Well, there's a couple of things. One is that we do make sure that our elected officials know, as Dr. Tim Schneider said, do not obey in advance, right? The number one item in the On Tyranny book, which if you haven't read it, check it out. There's also, oh, by the way, online, there's videos of each of the 10 On Tyranny chapters. So you can like do a YouTube and get up to speed on what we're talking about here. But do not obey in advance. And our goal with talking to our staffers is to do two things, to let them know that message we feel heartfelt, but also that it's, you know, people are going to be stopping in at their offices. There are literally people across the country this week doing this. So that's organized by Indivisible, Move On, and the Working Families Party.
And there's ways to do it rather than breaking in the windows and the doors of Congress.
We're gonna be invited in to have a respectful conversation with our senators' aides about what they need to do. The other thing that's behind some of this is, you know, if you read again Democracy in Chains, which I go back to, and it's really libertarian views, which I have a whole new disrespect for, frankly, if you allow me to use that word. Not for everybody who follows that, because there are probably some reasonable elements there. But one of the key things that Dr. Nancy McLean cited with libertarianism is the notion that really wealthy people adhere to this because, for example, one of the things is, oh, taxes? yeah, well, only if I agree.
Yeah.
Only if I agree should I be taxed. And there wasn't this majority thing. The majority didn't really matter. It's, you know, you had to basically get me to check in and say it's okay for you to tax my wealth. Mm-hmm. Is one of the sort of founding thoughts that Buchanan and others came up with. So there's these underlying belief systems that are really kind of at the root of some of the things we're seeing today. And as Dr. McLean said, if most Americans knew what they were trying to do, we'd totally reject it out of hand.
Right. And I think that's a really important piece. You know, we're talking, it's very hard to imagine becoming Nazi Germany, right? It's just sort of, it's, I think, something that viscerally we sort of, even the most credulous among us who see that path, you know, happening, it's viscerally hard to believe, well, that's going to happen. But I think, you know, as we talk to folks, what does it mean, right? It means for folks who may not see themselves in potentially marginalized or targeted communities, right? It means, you know, okay, I own a small business, I own a restaurant, and, you know, I have a chicken dinner special one night, and everyone at the restaurant becomes sick, I am sued, and my restaurant is shut down. And that happens because we're no longer tracking outbreaks, right, of diseases among our livestock, right, because that piece of the administration has been shut down. What else does it mean? It means that, you know, now that Musk has control of the tap of the, you know, the government money, it means that, you know, Washington State actually is no longer safe. It means that your grandma may no longer get her Social Security checks because Elon Musk had decided that Washington is non-compliant. What else does that mean? It means same thing for Medicare. It means that, you know, your prescriptions, if you live in, say, California, right, and Musk decides to shut off the tap of money, you're not going to get your prescriptions anymore. What else does it mean? It means your kids go to school in Ohio and, you know, they all get sick because they're drinking water that is no longer clean, right? It means things like TB that have been eliminated are on the rise in Kansas. So, you know, I think it's hard to imagine a fascist sort of world. But, you know, if we talk about it, it really does trickle all the way down to everyday Americans. And it's more than, you know, the price of your next car is going to double, right? It's more than XYZ. It is all of these tiny little things that keep us safe and productive. It means, you know, I-5 basically crumbles and collapses because there is no more infrastructure money for I-5. And what does that mean? Do you get goods and services coming up and down I-5, right? So I think to start talking about it in real world terms, like when you go to the grocery store, the milk you drink may no longer be safe, right?
You hit upon a number of very important themes, if you will. And this latest move by the president and Elon to go in to look at the various private documents that we have, and to take a look at the AID program in the State Department, which will give these 20-something computer guys who are looking at it an opportunity to look at all sorts of highly confidential and secret State Department documents, which are now basically compromised. Those are significant. But the first one, the one about being able to go in and get your private financial information from an individual who wasn't elected, wasn't ratified, wasn't approved, is barely an employee, some kind of special employee, which you have to go through certain steps to be appointed, which were never gone through. An individual who has massive conflicts of interest because he has so many government contracts. Mm-hmm. Did anybody really vote for that?
Right.
Did anybody on the far left, and excuse me, Truman, or the far right, did they vote for that?
I think they did, honestly.
Well, some
I think
did.
A lot of
some
them did.
Well, when it comes to the USAID, yeah, definitely.
Well, I know, but what about looking into your private information?
Yeah, no, they can't. They can't possibly approve of that.
I think I would be surprised. I think in the service of the strongman that they want, they are willing to make extreme concessions.
Yeah, and that was my next point. The point of many of these things is to create chaos. It's to gut traditional government institutions. You create chaos. But at the same time, then they respond by going, well, we have a mandate. We won this election by so much. Well, obviously, if you look into it, they didn't win the election by more than a percentage or whatever it was. So the other thing is the fact that it's this whole I have a mandate thing. Okay, even if you did have a mandate, it doesn't permit you to do whatever you want to do.
Mm-mm.
You still have to abide by the Constitution and the laws. I look at this thing about going in and looking at our private information that Trump has the access to, Musk has the access to, has so many problems with it. It violates the separation of powers under Article 1, the legislative powers of the Constitution, Article 2, the executive powers of the Constitution. It's vague, I mean, as to what they can do, what they're permitted to do.
And what they plan to do.
Yeah, and that's particularly true in the DEI setting.
Yeah.
What is involved in DEI? So we can fire anybody.
Whatever they want.
Anybody and everybody who's involved in DEI can be laid off because it's not consistent with the president's mandate. No, it doesn't work that way.
And you could also be fired for refusing to, even if you are not per se involved in DEI, you can be fired for refusing to dismantle, right? If you are a manager of a program,
right?
And maybe just one of the things under your purview, right? So it is, as we know, it's just a cover to do whatever it is.
And then
the
final end game is if you do destroy a lot of these government institutions, how are we going to put them back together again? Well, under those circumstances, typically you turn to a strong man. Mm-hmm. You've got one individual who says, I'm the only one who can fix this. Mm-hmm. So even though it's hard to believe that we might have something akin to the fascist state in some countries in South America and in Germany and whatnot, if you're as old as some of us, we can imagine it.
Yeah, and I agreed for sure. And Bruce, I'm sure you have perspectives on, you know, there must be other countries. And I think perhaps familiarizing ourselves with Hungary and what's going on there, right? Because I do think there's just sort of this visceral, well, of course we're not Nazi Germany, right? That would never happen. And, you know, I think that there's shame associated, obviously, with an executive order that sequestered American citizens and sent them to concentration camps. But, you know, where else can we look and how else can we understand, you know, if you're not worried about being targeted, you still should be worried. And why is this? And it's these everyday things, you know, we're worried right now that our, you know, the stock market ride is going to be crazy. So if you have retirement, you know, that has any kind of investment, and especially if we with Musk in control of the treasury and looking to, you know, move that to crypto, blockchain, you know, if we lose the value, the American dollar is the gold standard. If we lose the value of the dollar and, you know, we only have to look to our neighbors to the south to understand what happens in a financial collapse.
Yeah. Well, so I think that, you know, this sort of dialogue about, well, we can't imagine that here. I think last week I was moved to mention that I think that we're best to make the assumption that we are now living in an authoritarian state. And the logic in my mind for saying that is that it sort of dispels this myth of it can't really be happening, right? And oftentimes we hear about, you know, things that are terrible that happen, and because we didn't have the imagination to understand. I mean, 9/11, I heard that comment. I can't tell you how many times we didn't have the imagination to think that somebody would fly an airliner into the Twin Towers, but it obviously did happen. So I think that if we cloud our creativity about and our rational looking at what's happening with the idea that it can't happen here, we're not an authoritarian state, we never will be, that that's just going to propel us to not really see the reality for what it is. How we react to it is a different thing, but I think that we need to understand that we are playing a different game now, and it has changed dramatically.
And as a historian, it's interesting because we've been here before. I mean, we tend not to think of it as being here before because history tends to sort of level things out, you know, and create a narrative that is sort of pointed toward progress, particularly in American history. You know, it's a sort of a movement toward a better world kind of thing. But, you know, when the Jeffersonian Revolution took over, I mean, the conservatives thought it was the end of the world. You know, when Jackson came into power, I mean, the old line, Jackson was the first president elected who was not from Virginia or Massachusetts. It was the end of the world. This wild Westerner, and Jackson came in and he did lots of stuff. And it did destroy that world, if you will, that was controlled by Virginia and Massachusetts. You know, the Civil War, I mean, ultimately, you know, that's the worst outcome of this kind of conflict, and that's certainly not out of the cards. It depends on how the military begins to react to some of these actions. That's going to be the real test of where we go. You know, but you also got that with the New Deal. If you go back and read the newspapers from the New Deal, particularly the more conservative newspapers, you know, Hitler was FDR was just like Hitler. He was creating new agencies. He was changing the way the government worked. I mean, the world was coming apart in their eyes. Reagan Revolution, similar kinds of things. You know, if you're an air traffic controller,
yeah.
You know, the difference to me is the degree of it and the intensity of it and the rapidity of it because of sort of the electronic age we live in. I think that's what's new, and that's what we're having to try and get our hands around and our heads around is how we react to that. And so it isn't like we haven't been here before, but in the past we've been able to overcome it with the Civil War as the worst case, you know, with armed conflict. But it's not like any of this is new. It's just in a new form and with a new intensity and with an oligarchy in place. But that's not much different than the 1880s and 1890s. When we had the Jay Goulds and the Morgans and the Carnegies running the world. And, of course, that blew up in their face with the Progressive Era. So, you know, if you step back, I mean, yeah, the world's coming apart, but the world's always been coming apart. How are we going to put it back together?
You know, though, this gets back to this topic that we've talked about repeatedly, and that is the way the news is propagated. I mean, you know, before we had a central kind of figure that gave us the news, Walter Cronkite, you know, that sort of thing. And now it's on fire. Mm-hmm. I mean, how in the world do we get some control over how all of this is being disseminated? That's the thing that bothers me. And I think it's one of the things that makes this quite a bit different, you know.
Well, and you know, Bruce, you mentioned the fact that there's this electronic environment we now live in, and I suspect that is what you're referring to, and the notion that many things have also happened since some of those historical events. And I don't know what your thoughts are about this, but propaganda has been around, right, forever. is it more effective now? Are the sociologists and psychologists more able to understand how to really mobilize people in a way that they didn't have that ability or the understanding of how to influence a person's behaviors and decision-making? Now you have a delivery system, right, which can go out to millions and millions of people through all, as Truman, as you mentioned, all kinds of different avenues. So is that a changing of the game, and will that change the possible outcomes? I think maybe that's an unknown for us, but maybe there is some perspective on that.
You know, the one thing that this really, really angered me, but at the same time, I think it probably did a number of other people, and that's when Trump came out after the mid-air collision. And the first thing he said was, oh, well, this is a DEI problem. Mm-hmm. It's all Biden's fault. And there's so many people had to have gone, are you kidding me? You know, come on. And the realization that this guy is completely nuts had to have an effect, you know, on the population.
I don't know. He's been doing, you know, this is crazy instance number 556,000 of him doing these things. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, we have not had success in beating back the narratives. Or I think people have consciously still said, we've seen this, right, from exit polling and interviews. Mm-hmm. I know he says outrageous things, but I still like what he's doing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I think people still like what he's doing.
Well, and that's our test. I mean, we all believe in democracy. Well, you know, democracy spoke pretty loudly on November 5th in terms of where they wanted this country, where we as a people, not you and I as individuals, but where is we as a country want to go. I mean, it was a pretty clear statement that they were unhappy with where we were and they wanted to go someplace else. Now, did they want to go where Trump is taking us? That's the real question. And I personally don't think so, to the extremes that he's going. But at the same time, when you live in democracy, you got to live by the results of elections. And it's sort of like, how do you counter that in the next election? How do you counter that in the meantime without having a civil war?
Well, it's like when we go into an Arab country, for example, and we say we have to liberate these people and give them democracy, and then they choose a strongman. Well, that's what they chose, you know. Are we going to live by what we say or not? I mean, I think the same thing, Bruce, exactly.
The horns of the dilemma.
And, Craig, I'm interested, you know, obviously lawsuits are flying through the air on all of these things. And I'm curious about sort of what you see on some of these. I mean, I think some of these will be rejected patently out of hand. Some of them will take a little while, but curious about that. And then kind of curious about what do we do when they say, okay, we'll comply, and then they don't.
Yeah.
Or when they say, oh, well, nope, we're still going to do it anyway, right, when they challenge the rule of law.
That's a, you know, that's the Marbury versus Madison issue that we had at the closer to the inception of the country, is that who's going to control? Does the government have to follow the dictates of the Supreme Court? And, of course, the Supreme Court, and it was settled law at the time that, yes, we did. Yes, they do. There are times when we'd rather they didn't, but not right now. Now we wish they would comply with good decisions. If they don't comply with the supreme rulings of the land out of the Supreme Court, then you have a true constitutional crisis. We keep you throwing that term around, constitutional crisis. Then you've changed totally the nature of our government. And then who knows? You know, all bets are off at that point. The other thing about the success or failure, obviously, like this case that was in Seattle, there was no question that the birthright, trying to do away with birthright citizenship, was patently unconstitutional. There's a lot of stuff that's in the seam, as they keep saying. It's unprecedented. It's in a gray zone. Nobody's ever really seen it before. What are the arguments that can be made in court? I mean, some of them I touched upon a moment ago, you know, separation of powers, established administrative rules that you have to follow. That's the law for the government. They have to follow their own rules. So there's those sorts of things. There's equal rights that you're under the Constitution that you're entitled to. And DEI, and doing away with people without any justification because they were sent to a DEI seminar for an hour, and therefore they have to be thrown out because their beliefs aren't consistent with the, you know, with the mandate that the president, you know, has. And I say that with my tongue sticking through my cheek. Trump people going into the OMB, you could make an argument that that's a Fourth Amendment right against your violation of your right of privacy that the government is engaged in without a warrant.
Yeah.
Because it's not patently authorized. There's nowhere is that activity authorized. So it couldn't be authorized without a legislative act on the part of Congress or a warrant from a judge. So there are many arguments, and this is where in law school we're taught not only where the law has been, but the imagination you can use as to where the law could be based upon theories that have been around for hundreds of years from the Magna Carta in England. So it's a very fluid situation.
So Craig, that gets us to this January 6th stuff, where all of these people have been pardoned. How in the world does that work? I mean, in the judicial system, when you have convicted criminals that are just suddenly turned loose. I mean, is there any?
It seems absurd, does it not?
Yeah.
Is there any, but at the same time, that particular provision of the Constitution is pretty doggone clear as to what the president is permitted to do.
Has the authority to do.
Yeah, in terms of clemency and pardons. Now, that doesn't mean that there's no way to strike back. As you may know, which state was it? Do you know
Minnesota, I think.
That the none of the individuals who were pardoned for the January 6th riot can be hired by our state government.
Right.
So there are ways to you know exercise and mm-hmm. and acknowledge the obscenity of these pardons.
Bruce. Yeah.
Oh, I think that was Pritzker in Ohio.
Was it Ohio?
Who did that, no, yes.
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, Kevin, you had some thoughts.
Well, I was doing a little research while you were talking, Bruce, about democracy, and I know that about a year ago you like got me straightened out, like, yeah, it is democracy, so whichever side wins is like, yeah, okay, yeah, right, they're in charge, okay, I got that. And, you know, it's hard to remind myself sometimes of that, but that is, you know, if we aspire to a democracy, yes, that is like the game plan, right? That's what we're buying into. That said, of course, 1%, I think, 1.5% was the margin that Trump won the popular vote. So in a democracy, when it is a razor-thin margin, right, I would say, it. Of course, it doesn't mean that we change our belief systems, right? It doesn't mean we change our values. It means we have recognition of the respect that more people than were on my side caused this outcome to happen. And so we should respect that. I am curious, when you went back through the history of all of the things that have occurred that sort of put us back, you know, remind us that we have not been here for the first time, right? And I imagine that this is true, that some of those incidents, there was the appearance of the desire to basically tear down democracy. But was that really true? There were things like Huey Long, right, who basically was able to dominate democratic politics. But anywhere along the line, was that those incidents coupled with the notion that we're really done with democracy here? What do you think?
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly if you look at Jackson and the Jacksonian era, and that's sort of the conflict between the old elites, you know, and this sort of new Western emerging power in the United States. But it's hard to say right now that Trump wants to do away with democracy. You know, he's not canceling elections. He's not telling.
Not yet.
Hmm? Well, not yet. Again, you know, again, I mean, that was a concern of conservatives in the 1930s with Roosevelt. I mean, that's why we got the amendment to limit presidents to two terms, because Roosevelt got four terms. And conservatives were very concerned about that. So hard to say that we're doing away with democracy right now. I mean, but, you know, to me, the real test is whether the United States can move to rank order voting, which is true democracy, much truer than this sort of winner-takes-all kind of democracy that we have right now, which is not really democracy. And, you know, we're a federated system. We're not a democratic system. We're not a democracy. We're a federation. And so there's those, you know, sort of fine line the definitions that go on there that I think take some consideration and take some sort of, like, you know, take your foot off the pedal for a minute and sort of sit back and say, how can we most effectively deal with this in the long term? Because in the short term, it's going to be chaos.
And Kevin, you hit it right on the head, the solution. And that is that we had a number of people who decided that that's the way it ought to be. Mm-hmm. And they have a number of people who think that it shouldn't be. And our job is to convince those other guys that they made a mistake. And I think that's the solution to this whole
thing. You know, and people voted for Trump or voted for Kamala for various reasons. They didn't vote for necessarily everything that the individual believes in. There were, you know, a lot of people vote on a single issue. A lot of people, a lot of Christian, you know, voted for Trump because they thought he was opposed to abortion. And all the rest of it was, you know, that just went along with, you know, with it. And it's funny, you hear this, I've heard the same arguments you have, we all have. You know, I voted for Trump because I like his policy. I swear, there are a lot of people who voted for Trump, not necessarily because they liked his policy, but they like his personality. Mm-hmm. Love it or hate it, he has a certain authenticity. It's not one that I aspire to.
But yes. We could help you get there.
But it's a, you know, he's old school authentic, with his beliefs and his language and his the way he deals with minorities and issues like DEI and power and whatnot that is attractive to a lot of people, a lot of the bros. You know, I don't know.
Well, there's a couple of things. The good news is the states run the elections, not the federal government. Yep. Right. So I think that's to the good in terms of what we can look forward to. There are elections coming up in 2025, this year, the Wisconsin Supreme Court in April. You can make phone calls right now once we got our get out the vote page ready, hopefully in the next week or so, that's going to be up. And if you get our newsletter, I'm going to publish exactly how you can make phone calls so the Wisconsin State Supreme Court maintains that's one seat progressive majority. And the reason that's important is in 2026, there's going to be elections for the governor and the Secretary of State and the Attorney General. And, you know, we really want the court there in Wisconsin to make sure that the votes get counted the right way. You know, I mean, they count all the votes, right? And that they allow people to actually get to the polls to really vote. So those are some of the things that can be done in the near term. And, you know, if you want that kind of information, indivisiblevashon.org, so shameless self-promotion, go out there and get on our newsletter, and we'll make sure that you guys, everybody who signs up can see those opportunities.
Well, continuing with that self-promotion, I am running for re-election in November.
Fantastic. So all right. We'll put you on our list.
Put me on your
Truman
list.
Truman on the candidates page.
There you go.
I know we're getting down to the last few minutes, but Amy, maybe you, what can we do for populations on Vashon who feel threatened, who are afraid? I mean, what can we, as sort of just regular islanders, is there anything we can do? And if there is, what can we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this kind of dovetails into next week. We're going to be speaking with Patricia Benuelos from Vashon Youth and Family Services, and she and I have been emailing back and forth. And in fact, there are concerted efforts right now around heads up around ICE, and Lydia Aguilar is doing quite a bit of work around that. And I did want to sort of bring to mind the folks for whom this is not theoretical even now, right? For whom it is already a clear and present danger. And that includes, you know, not just our undocumented folks, but it includes anyone who is of, you know, perhaps a specific color who may appear undocumented, right? Who gets rounded up and who carries your passport with you or your birth certificate with you at all times. Some folks do because they know how dangerous it is right now. But, you know, the agent just doesn't happen to see that, or you don't happen to have it, and you're on a plane somewhere before you know it.
About the little red cards.
Yes.
You want to talk about those?
Yeah, right. And, you know, but it really is, it's the folks, you know, agents can choose to look the other way even if you do have the correct documentation, right? And, you know, we don't, because of our, you know, the color of our skin, we don't necessarily live in that world, but there are folks who do. And there are folks who, you know, live in many communities where, you know, they may be perceived as a DEI individual, particularly our transgender community members, who, you know, they just go out to where they've always been going out to, and all of a sudden they are very much in danger because the bros are in power, right? And they're feeling their oats around that. So, you know, for many of us, it's not theoretical, this discussion anymore. So, you know, I definitely want to acknowledge that and acknowledge the folks for whom this democracy has always been theoretical or became more theoretical, you know, around restriction of voting rights, around, you know, what essentially are just voter suppression, right, that's going on in so many places. Like, all of those things are still very true. So, wanted to just kind of call that out, and I think over the next few weeks for sure we'll be paying a little more attention. But yes, next week Patricia Benuelos from Vashon Youth and Family Services talking about what she's doing. We'll really focus on her, but I think for sure we can touch on some other pieces of how we can support our community.
Okay, and thanks everyone very much. Bruce, Kevin, Craig, Amy, I'm Truman O'Brien. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you all next week.